Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear plus my friends in the third row and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey everyone, this is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. men's national team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Welcome into Attacking Third, brought to you by CarMax, the way car buying should be. Darian Jenkins, Lisa Carlin, and I'm Jenny Chu here for you guys on this beautiful Monday morning after a national championship in women's basketball. Lisa, you are our resident women's basketball fan on the desk, so tell us about that final.
Jenny, it was very exciting. South Carolina took on Iowa, and Caitlin Clark, who had captured the entire country by storm with her ability to shoot threes from the logo, but ultimately it's Dawn Staley and the Gamecocks for South Carolina finally getting it done. They came so close the last 2 years, and they go undefeated all the way to the national championship, and so much emotion from Dawn Staley following the game. It was really fun to watch.
Darian, Dawn Staley.
Yeah, I'm a Dawn Staley stan.
It's because she's from Philly, right?
Yeah. I like Philly people. You Philly people are great. We're friends.
It's incredible. She has had.
Yeah, she's breaking records left and right. Highest paid coach in college basketball. Like, I love it. I think this is huge. I love that finally the world is catching on to what's already been, you know, women's basketball has been incredible for so long. And finally, when you give them the media visibility, look what happens. I love it.
Women's sports, snaps to that. Here we are on a women's soccer show as well. Happy to be here. Let's go straight into the U.S. Women's National Team against Japan. We have the live on YouTube right after the match. So we've already talked extensively about this match. But if you were to kind of summarize, Darian, what we discussed and the big takeaways from that match, what would they be?
Yeah, Jaden Shaw is a baller, leading this team, coming in, playing a new position in the 10, really adapting. We're seeing her grow and be incredibly versatile for this U.S. Women's National Team, and I think she's really solidified her spot going into the Olympics, actually, from this match. But the U.S. having to come down from a goal really early on in the match in the first minute. And I love seeing that tenacity and the resilience that the U.S. had to come back and win 2-1, but again, there's still some questions around the U.S. with set pieces and going into a low block and the timing of that, connecting in the front three and finishing chances. I think we still need a little bit more, but let's go through the highlights. I want to be able to show you guys what I'm talking about. Yeah, U.S. against Japan. Last year, Mal Swanson scored against Japan and gave them the win. Here, again, like I said, in the first minute, Japan gets this ball over the top of Jenna Neiswanger's side. Kiko Seiki with a brilliant finish, low and hard, far post past Alyssa Nair. This really set the tone. 31 seconds into the game, this is the first time the U.S. has conceded in the first minute since 2003. And then in the 16th minute, unfortunately, our girl, we all love this player, Naomi Girma, goes down with an apparent thigh injury. Luckily, it's nothing too severe. They're taking it day by day. And then in the 21st minute, Sam Coffey here with this great step, passes it off to Shaw, who says, why not? Low and hard far post, or to the near post, I apologize, and pushes it past the keeper. I love this for Shaw. She has the audacity to take shots from range. Quick 1-2 step, great finish. Then in the 76th minute, Sophia Smith comes on, goes 1v1, splits two Japanese defenders, and gets a penalty. She was immediately effective, and none other than El Capitan steps up and finishes this penalty and gives the U.S. the lead over Japan. We have to say that we didn't see many highlights of Mal Swanson. She was incredible in this match. She was definitely the best player on the pitch for me from both teams, and I love seeing her in form. And you see how much this U.S. team has really missed her. I think she's really the glue that they've been missing for the last year or so.
Swanson was so lethal down the flank, and her ability to also drop back into the midfield and help support, whether it was Horan and Coffey or Shaw, even in those positions. Mm-hmm. I was really impressed with the partnership between Jaden Shaw and Mallory Swanson, because they really haven't played together. When you think of the timeline of Shaw getting onto the national team and Swanson coming back from injury, but they looked really comfortable together. I was impressed with it. And overall, the U.S. and the response to how they came back after 30 seconds, and that could have been deflating for them. Their response said a lot. And we want the U.S. to be tested. And in those moments, they get tested. Now we get to see how they respond, and it didn't look too bad.
Beautifully said. I just want to give a quick shout-out to Sam Coffey, because you guys know I always give a shout-out to Sam Coffey. She had a great match, and she did get taken off for precautionary reasons. She will be back or available for this next final. Let's go into the other semifinal, and who will be facing the U.S. Women's National Team will be facing Canada, but for that to happen, Canada faced Brazil. Let's go ahead and go through those highlights, Lisa.
Jenny, this was a fun matchup between Canada and Brazil. We got to see Bev Priestman roll out with some changes. Brazil as well. It started, though, in the 22nd minute, a foul in the box. And Tarciane for Brazil, she steps up and she finishes it. Jade Rose committed the foul in the back for Canada, but Brazil off to a fast start. 32nd minute, Brazil would stay on the front foot. Look at that shot from distance. Buchanan clears it and it falls right to Antonio. That misses by what felt like inches. It looked like it too. Second half action, Brazil leading 1-0. Simi Awojo, top of the box. If you're going to give her space, the 20-year-old is going to shoot. This one just barely misses off the post, but the curl on it looked pretty good. At the hour mark, an opportunity top of the box for Brazil. It gets bounced around. Kaylin Sheridan coming out with a huge save. It's Yasmin for Brazil, who tries to strike it with her right foot. She knew she had that opportunity. 77th minute, a set piece. This is where Canada thrives, and it's Vanessa Gil. The defending for Brazil, questionable to me. They have six lined up at the top of the box, and they leave Gil open. She's able to get the header. But, Jenny, this means at the end of 90 minutes, we are tied 1-1. We're going to pens. It is Marta against Sheridan, and Sheridan with a huge opening save. Final penalty kick shot, Jade Rose with conviction to the corner, and ultimately Canada gets the win. But there were 10 shots on target for Brazil throughout this match. Kaylin Sheridan, hands down, kept Canada in this game.
Yeah, Julia Grosso with that last penalty kick there. So now it is Canada against the U.S. Women's National Team in this final. And you going through those Canada highlights, tell us what you saw from Canada and what you think they need to improve to get the win against the United States.
A lot of holes in the back for Canada in their three back. And they were tested with the way Brazil was attacking and a lot of the second wave pressure. So when Brazil had moments of spells in the attack. Brazil did a really good job of getting end line, but then the top of the box was wide open. So whether it was the second wave runners coming in, Canada just did a terrible job marking them, or even second chances on shots. So if Canada got the initial clearance, Brazil was there to clean it all up. So it's the second phase defending for Canada where it all fell apart. The biggest bright spot in Canada's attack was Simi Awojo. Mm-hmm. She looked really good and confident on the ball, and in moments when she was able to find space, the best chance that Canada had in the first 60 minutes came from a shot from Awojo.
I will say, too, Canada's attack looked so stale this match. Everything felt like a little bit of a last-ditch effort to get the shot off. Everything was a little unbalanced. It wasn't the confident Canada side we saw in the W Gold Cup, and I wonder if that's just the competition they're playing. Brazil is an incredible team in good form right now. Shout out to Yaya. I'm a huge fan of Yaya. I think she has made her place on this Brazilian side. But Brazil or Canada just looked like they were really struggling to finish in the attack. It wasn't the same chemistry we saw before. They weren't breaking teams down. But I think Canada's lucky to get away with this
win. For sure.
100%.
When in the 63rd minute or so, I think it was, Bianca St. George came on for Canada. And I liked what she brought off the bench.
It was a fight.
Yeah, which she always brings, right? She's always good for a yellow card or so. But ultimately, the goal came after that one for Canada, after BSG came onto the pitch and she started to get into her groove a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if we see St. George start ultimately against
the
United States.
Okay, so that's talking about potentially the vulnerabilities that Canada has. What do you want to see from the United States exposing those vulnerabilities? And then potentially, where are they vulnerable that we saw from them in the Japan match?
Yeah, I think the U.S. will look back at that game, Brazil versus Canada, and take note of what Brazil did. It's those first and second waves. Canada looking at the gaps, especially if they play in that three back. I think that's a really good test for the U.S. to go up against. We have players, the U.S. has players that can expose those spaces and go 1v1. I think the one thing the U.S. needs to be cautious of is those set pieces. Vanessa Gilles, love that girl. She scores off of her head so often. She is so lethal on set pieces. And she's not the only one for Canada. And I think they're watching film on U.S. versus Japan. That's a space to hit the U.S. Another thing in U.S.'s attack, connecting with the nine a little bit better. It looked very one-dimensional in the game against Japan. I think some of the runs, the pass and the run weren't matching up between the front three and Jaden Shaw and Lindsey Horan. So I want to see the U.S. get back into that groove of they have these sequences really planned out. They're all on the same page, reading each other well. And hopefully we see that in this next game.
We have seen more and more, Lisa, of these teams around the world, men's and women's, having set-piece coaches specifically for that. Do you think that that's something that the U.S. needs, or do they have one that I'm not aware of?
I don't know if they have one, but they need to just be more focused almost on these set pieces. It's like mental lapses, and whether it's marking or going in the zone, having a clear-cut plan of this is what's happening. And I think it comes down to a lot of individual onus, knowing that if I'm marking up against someone, I am not letting that player touch the ball. You have to have everything in you to make that happen. And I think that Canada is better at set pieces attacking them than the United States is at defending them.
Yeah. I agree. And I also think when the U.S. has subs coming in and out, you know, Coffee came out. I think she wouldn't have come out unless she got the head caution. But Albert coming in and like a miscommunication and it's very rushed. Yep. I think that has a lot to do with a lot of the spaces that are open against the U.S. on set pieces in particular. And you're switching tactics. That's a really, really hard adjustment.
That's something that we didn't get to touch on yet. The fact that when those subs were made, there was a change of tactics. We did talk about this after the live on that game. But the fact that they did go into such a defensive structure, something that we didn't want to see. But when you're losing Naomi Girma, the stonewall in that center, those defensive moments, those defensive transitions, those defensive set pieces, that becomes a potential vulnerability for the U.S., Lisa.
It does. But Girma came out in the 20th minute.
Yeah, it was early.
The changes that came from Twyla Kilgore came after the 80th minute with 10 minutes left in the match to drop back and be a five back. Yes, with Girma in there, she does organize and vocally lead as much, but that doesn't matter. Everyone should be doing it. No matter who's the center back, who's in goal, the midfielders, the forwards, the communication should be coming from every single player on the pitch to be on the same page and have an understanding of where people need to be. And if Albert comes in and there is a change of formation and a change and there's a set piece happening all at the same time, and Albert doesn't know where she needs to be asking questions of the center backs, Davidson or the goalkeeper, Alyssa Nayer, or Abby Dahlkemper, saying, where do you need me? Who am I marking on? There has to be a level of urgency coming on the defensive set pieces.
Yep, beautifully said, Lisa. The U.S. is going to play for their seventh She Believes Cup title. That is on Wednesday. We'll also have the other matchup between Brazil and Japan. For third place, that's at 4 p.m. Eastern time. The final is at 7 p.m. Eastern time, USA against Canada. The rematch that we wanted because we had a bit of a rain game last time around. That is all on TBS. We're going to go to a quick break, and we will have Sandra Herrera joining us next. So stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back into Attacking Third. It is now time to bring in Sandra Herrera, OG Attacking Third member, our CBS Sports writer and fellow Mexicana. Sandra, welcome in.
Border for duty. Jenny, I love that intro. What's up?
I love it. I love it. Sandra, we already addressed some of the injury news regarding Sam Coffey, just precautionary measures, Naomi Girma with a little bit of a thigh. She is day to day. But you were just on the U.S. Women's National Team press conference this morning. What were your biggest takeaways on this?
You know, it wasn't shocking to hear that the first question that Kilgore got asked was about that injury update for Girma and Coffey. But really, a lot of the takeaways from this opening press conference was around Jaden Shaw and just this performance that we keep seeing from her. I think there was a lot more revamped interest around it because we got to see Jaden Shaw in that attacking 10 role. And that provides different looks. It provides a look at Jaden Shaw and the versatility that she can provide for this team. And really, again, reiterating the importance of players being able to play across different lines and, you know, whenever they're asked different things. And I really love that Twyla Kilgore essentially said that this is really just scratching the surface, even though so many of us are celebrating Shaw and her arrival and how she's not playing like a young player. But for us to kind of not so much quell our expectations, but to kind of prepare ourselves because there's even more to come from Jade Shaw.
This is just the beginning for Shaw. That's incredibly scary for opposition, and I'm excited to watch it. We hopefully get to see Jaden Shaw get the start as the U.S. takes on Canada in the She Believes Cup final. Sandra, this is a match that we've been waiting for since the W Gold Cup because we didn't get to see it. That was a waterlogged game. What are your expectations for the United States as they take on Canada?
I'm going to look for player rotation. I think that player load and minute management is the thing that's in the front of this coaching staff's minds. But it's also a characteristic that we've seen from them as well. This is the coaching staff that has not shied away from kind of rotating players in and out of their starting 11s, utilizing substitution windows as they go. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see some changes in this one, but I also wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see a little bit of continuity of Jaden Shaw and what she can provide for this team. But I'm also very curious about what we're going to see on Canada's side. I think what we saw in that opening game against Brazil was a little bit different from maybe what we saw Beth Priestman trying to progress in terms of tactical changes and shifts and formations through that Gold Cup. Is that a little bit of gamesmanship? Were they saving something perhaps for that second game in She Believes Cup? We'll find out.
Sandra, I want to ask about the third place match, Japan versus Brazil. These are two both technically incredibly gifted teams. In fact, I actually thought Brazil deserved to win that game against Canada, but shout out to Kaylin Sheridan, kept Canada in the match. What do you expect to see from Japan and Brazil? I'm really looking forward to this technical tactical matchup between these two teams.
I'm going to look for who's actually going to want the ball a little bit more. I mean, these are two teams that like to take control of that, and they want to make very cool things happen when they have the ball at their feet. But is this also going to be an opportunity for Japan to maybe sort of build off of what they were trying to do against the United States? Maybe pick and choose their moments of time in which they press on the ball, try to retain the ball, and make something happen. I have a feeling that maybe they want to build off of what they were essentially trying to do with the United States. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe there are stretches of the games where they concede a little bit of the ball to Brazil, because we know Japan is capable of being very clinical in the final third when they do have time on that ball.
Sandra, during this international break, there's a lot of other competition happening, including Panama. They took on Venezuela and fell 2-0. It's been a tough run of play for Panama. They got outscored during the W Gold Cup 13-1. It's just really tough to watch Panama right now. Where are all these issues stemming from for Panama?
Well, first of all, I hate it. I there's no other way to go about it, but put that bluntly. I mean, this is a CONCACAF side that we saw kind of raising the bar for themselves. Players, representing this country and taking the program to heights previously unknown. And then we saw this very disappointing Gold Cup for them. We saw Marta Cox in tears, essentially, after just a group game where they did not have the best showing. They had even some blowout scorelines there. And we could tell that there was a layer there of discouragement, disappointment, but there was something else. And it wasn't until after that Gold Cup where Marta Cox said, this is not enough, demanded a bit more from the federation. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think you want to have your players, your best players, feel that way and want to have more and be better and grow along these tournaments. But instead, we saw the federation president make terribly crude comments to Marta Cox, making references to her weight, essentially fat shaming her, saying that she was too slow and that she doesn't know anything about Panama's leagues and how the federation is ran. The federation eventually gave an apology upon his behalf, so there wasn't an actual apology from him, but it's very discouraging to see how all of these things have essentially a parallel, that maybe there's a bit of a disconnect right now between players and the federation and the ultimate goals for this program, because they are in a bit of a skid. They have not had a win in quite some time, and it's absolutely discouraging and disappointing knowing where they have been, what they have achieved, and if they had the resources and support, where they could go.
Sandra, we completely agree with you. It's really discouraging. This team deserves a lot better, and that entire federation needs a revamp. But let's go over to Mexico versus Colombia. What's happening to Mexico? We saw them have such a great debut Gold Cup, but looking at these stats, 11 shots for Colombia, 1 to Mexico, 0 on target. What's going on? Take us through that.
Really disappointing. We're just talking about the things that I hate. I hate what's going on with Panama. I hate what we're seeing with Mexico right now. We're talking about teams that are on a bit of a skid. And I think, look, Mexico had a lot to ride high on out of that Gold Cup, that historic win against the United States, but they underperformed against Brazil in that semifinal. And now they have another loss, and this time it's against South Americans and Colombia as well. So the narrow scoreline is maybe something that doesn't tell the entire story. But I think when you run those numbers through, Darian, I think we can visualize and see how Mexico maybe is trying to expel a lot of energy but not getting a lot of chances either, which is a little bit different from what we saw from them in the Gold Cup. So while I really do like the fact that Pedro Lopez and the federation is getting this team together more often for opportunities during international windows against high caliber competition, that was that next step that we wanted to see. We saw them go undefeated in 2023, and we wanted to see them kind of turn that into a 2024 where they kind of got a little bit tested from different types of teams. So we saw them get the win against the United States. Now they're going up against World Cup quarterfinalists, Colombia, unfortunately not getting the win there, but now they've got to take on Australia in San Antonio. So again, more Mexico W tour. I'm here for it. I would love to continue to see them play games in the United States, but we want to see them get these experiences and come away with results, come away with wins. So they have a tall order going up against Australia as well. We'll see how that turns out.
Hey, Sandra, I completely agree with you. The fact that we want them to get this experience, right, as someone who represented Mexico, playing with other clubs within Mexico is not really a good example of what we're going to face in World Cups, in Olympics, in different competitions like that. So making sure that they're getting these games is so important. Whether or not they win or lose, I think just understanding the competition that's out there is the point that they're at right now, and I love to see it. Sandra, I don't want to let you go without seeing your eclipse glasses. Can we just talk about what you're repping today?
I'm ready. Let's
Swaggy.
Go. It's all about the national championship weekend.
Yes.
And it's all about the eclipse.
I need
Midwest
this.
Finest.
I need this picture.
You get teams in the national championship if you're from the Midwest, and you get easy access to the eclipse.
You're gonna get a good view. We're expecting a picture from you, Sandra. Thank you so much for joining us.
Take it easy, y'all.
All right, stay here with us on Attacking Third. We have so much more for you. We'll see you in a bit.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Welcome back in to Attacking Third. We have the Women's Euro qualifiers weekend results here. England drew against Sweden. Italy winning 2-0 against Netherlands, who continues to slide and slide. And Spain with a 7-0 win against Belgium, something that we can expect from this team that has so much attacking power. France beating the Republic of Ireland, and of course Germany getting a controversial win against Austria there. Let's go straight into England against Sweden highlights, Darian.
Yeah, this was a really exciting game. I was expecting England to come away with a little bit more of a convicted win. Ended up tying it 1-1 against Sweden. But the Swedes put up a really good fight. I like this matchup. It asked a lot of questions against England and vice versa for Sweden. Starts early in the 24th minute here. England gets an opportunity. Lauren James on the wing, slicing and dicing in the box, pops this ball into Alessia Russo, who finishes right away. And look at this, I love this. James attracts so many players. Russo coming in between two defenders on the back post and slots it for an early lead for England.
How enticing is that ball from James? I want to be on the end of that one.
Well, you're going to see something similar, because Sweden here off of a throw and gets a ball kind of in a similar position. This cross comes in and far post. Rolfo gets the finish. I love seeing her back with the Swedish national team. She's back from injuries, looking good with Barcelona. We see this goal so often from her in Spain. It's good to see her do it with her federation. She's never going to miss from there. Pushes it past. Very similar goal from what we saw with England. And then another really good chance a little bit later in the game, in the 88th minute. There's a cross, and it is saved by Kalp, who has a beautiful goal line clearance. This could have finished the game for England. Hemp gets on the end of this. We see her score from here time and time again. But the Swedes keep it 1-1. They split points. But I love this game. I do think England should have had more opportunities, could have had a win. But, you know, both teams did a really good job. I love seeing this for Sweden.
England was really patient on the ball and in their possession, especially during the first half, just waiting for the right moment to probe through Sweden's back line. And I think that confidence that England has, knowing that ultimately the goals are going to come, because they did, but really they came, Jenny, when Lauren James switched sides with Hemp, because James started on the left and she wasn't receiving a lot of the ball. She was dropping back into the midfield. She switched and goes on the right side, and it's almost like the first play back, James gets the ball, and that ultimately is the opening goal for England, because James just going 1v1 on that right side, she liked it over there, and she looks good.
You know she makes such a big difference anywhere she is on the pitch. But for Sweden, there was that big missed opportunity from Stina Blackstenius that could have absolutely changed the game. That's a big one. It's good to see Rolfo back with the Swedish national team as well. And I want to say, for me, we're going to talk about it a little bit more, but Jennifer Falk, Sweden's goalkeeper, absolutely massive in this game. The stats don't prove how important she was, but I do want to say that was a big one, and it was a great watch. Why don't we move on to Italy against Netherlands, Lisa?
Yeah, this was a really good matchup in Italy. So the Italians hosting the Netherlands at this side, and the Netherlands without some big, heavy hitters, Daphne van Domselaar. But for Italy, in the fourth minute, they looked pretty good. How beautiful is this through ball by Giuliano to Giacinci. What an opening goal in the fourth minute. She doesn't even turn. She knows exactly where the goal is. Second half action. Italy is now leading 1-0 down this left side flank. Off the bench, the cross into the box to Bonatantini. What a great job just flying through the air. Bonfantini on the back post. She gets it and just make sure it's in after she's already in the goal and the ball is in there too. Two goals for Italy over the Netherlands. Ultimately, Kopp, the goalkeeper for the Netherlands, not able to do anything on that last goal.
I don't know where to go to this. What do we talk about? The kind of downfall of the Netherlands? I don't know what happened there. Darian, I picked up your speech problem today. Or to talk about how good Italy has been. Why don't we go be a little bit positive here? And Italy, I mean, the fact that they just had two big wins, the win against Spain, the world champions, and now this win as well.
Yeah, I think Italy has a bit of a chip on their shoulder coming into this match. You see these finishes. Giacinti is a really, really good player. She's so dynamic. She's always hunting, expecting the ball to drop to her, to be in dangerous positions. She leads this Italian team, and I think her energy and the way that she attacks and how intense she is very, very contagious for this side. And they just played with a lot of heart. I don't think the Netherlands were able to match that in any way. I know that they were missing quite a few players, but they didn't have the same chemistry going forward as Italy did. And I think Italy really deserved this win. I like the looks from them. I like the convicted finishes, the going into the back of the net with the ball. It's intensity, it's passion. I love it. The Netherlands were really no match. They didn't have an answer.
For Italy, they were winning aerial balls. Mm-hmm. They were going hard into tackles. I think having heart throughout this match, like you mentioned, was a key factor for the Italians because they looked really confident. Of course, when you get a goal in the opening 4 minutes of a match at home, your confidence is just going to continue to build and grow throughout the match. And we saw that. And Netherlands really didn't have an answer throughout the 90 minutes.
One of the things is the connection that we're seeing on Italy, right? The different passes that they're making to each other. There are some connections in terms of club play, right? We have the two interplayers that combine on the goal for the assist and the goal as well. So just making sure that that lead continues to grow. We see that improvement happening and then we see it passed on to the national team as well. Good to see that from Italy. Let's move on to Austria against Germany. You heard me say it, Darian. I think it's a little bit controversial. I know you think so as well. Let's get into the highlights of this one and then we can talk about it.
Yeah, this was an intense game. It started early for Austria. Actually, in the first half, they were incredibly dominant. Dominant, oh my goodness. In the ninth minute, Campbell here picks off a ball from the defender, dribbles past, she looks to cross it, picks it up again, and then decides to finish herself. This really set the tone for Austria in the first half, and Germany didn't really have a response until later in the game. But in the 17th minute, again, Campbell off of a set piece. This is a beautiful ball served in. Great finish. There is nothing Fromms can do. It's right over the top of her. Although in the center, there's enough power on it where she wasn't able to save it. And then here in the 36th minute, Germany with a response that Buhl is able to touch and beautiful finish. And look at, they quickly go pick the ball up. They know what this means. This is where the tempo really started to fall in Germany's favor. And not only 10 minutes later, Buhl again, look at this beautiful up, back, and through play from the Germans. And insane finish. That angle is so tough. First time off of her left, evens the score. And then what Jenny was mentioning, this controversial penalty in our opinion. I'm not sure if Fragang gets on the end of this and it is not, I don't know. I still don't think this is a penalty, but it is finished by Gwyn. Germany gets the win. I don't know. I was swinging for Austria. I thought they came out with some fight. They had a lot of build-up play. They looked really dangerous coming into this match, but they couldn't maintain it into the second half, especially when Germany got their first goal. They didn't have the same response, and you could see that the Germans had a little bit more angst coming into this.
This was one of the best games of the international break so far, in my opinion. A lot of high-intensity energy. The way that Austria came out on the front foot, just plowing through, literally, on that opening goal.
That's exactly how you described the first goal.
Plowing through. But that was the mentality that Austria had against this German side throughout the entire match. And Germany, they just somehow climb back into it. I felt really bad for Austria at this point because Germans are down 2-0 during this match, and Germany started to find the little seams between Austria's backline, and they did a really good job of dictating the runs with the through passes to get in behind, splitting the seams between outside back, center back, and then the run coming through center back seam that ultimately got them in behind. I think it was a penalty kick.
I knew you were going to say that.
I knew that she was going to say that, too.
I knew
Darian
it.
And I
she
are
doesn't,
on the same
the goalkeeper
page here.
Doesn't get the ball. She trips the
she
forward
does get the ball.
Running through.
Yeah, she does hit it.
She does get the ball.
The player chips it over.
She deflects the ball. What is the keeper supposed to do there? I don't think it's a penalty.
I think her hands have to go towards the ball more so than her legs laying out.
Listen, if that went to VAR, here we go.
What else is she supposed to do?
Yeah, I don't think that's.
I don't know what else you ask a keeper. We need to ring somebody and ask.
Yeah.
I mean, beautiful penalty.
But that's why it's controversial, right? Like, there are people on both ends of this that will say, obviously, that's a penalty kick, and others will say, that's not a penalty kick, and that's the beauty of our game. But you know what? I would have appreciated some VAR. In this one?
No VAR.
Just saying, there is no VAR. But a good comeback for Germany, right? To be down 2-0, to come back, score two, and then the controversial penalty kick, they do end up getting this win. A good fight to see from this team.
Exciting from end to end on both sides for Germany and Austria.
Yep. Well, next we're going to be breaking down the CAF qualifiers, Olympic qualifiers here on Attacking Third, brought to you by CarMax, the way car buying should be.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We head to the CAF Olympic qualifying. These are the results of the first leg, Nigeria against South Africa. Nigeria edging the win there with a 1-0 win, and Morocco winning against Zambia 2-1. And the second leg of those matches will be on Tuesday, so make sure you tune in 1:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern time. We have so much to talk about, but before we start these conversations about the first leg of these matches, Zambia and Morocco, I want to talk about Levi Mwana Wasa Stadium, because it was nearly a sold-out stadium, and they seat 49,000 people. Ooh, just the absolute scenes, Darian.
Yeah, I love it. I love seeing the support for this federation and for these players. It is so well-deserved, and it's good to see the growth of the game. Look at the lights. What an atmosphere to play in. I love it. We need more of this.
It's so cool to see that and to get the support from them, and I think you could feel the crowd, like, watching this, yeah, right, and the energy in that stadium. It's about time. It's about time.
Yeah. Well, one of the big things for this one is my notes say referee, 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 like 17 times, which means that she had too much to do with this match. A couple of called back goals from Kundinanji as well. I know we're going to get into those, but what did you guys take from them so far? I thought it was a little bit rigged by the referee, and the fact that there is a second leg is important to me. There is no VAR, remind you, so that's an issue for me.
Yeah, I thought it was a really good game. I think both teams had, well, two amazing bangers of goals.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Both for their first... Muiba had a great answer to Rodani's banger, both on the left side of the pitch, the corner of the 18, whipped into the far post. Incredible goals. But Zambia was really unlucky to get not one, two goals called back and miss a penalty. I think they could have finished this game out, but Morocco really weathered the storm. They took advantage of Zambia's holes in their defense. We're playing through the seams. They're breaking them down. Zambia had a difficulty clearing the ball sometimes in their 18, and Morocco just took advantage of it.
It was the little tiny moments throughout this match for Zambia that they weren't able to put the game away, whether it was finishing those chances that they had, a couple of really good opportunities that would have just created so much more separation against Morocco. And in those defensive moments where Zambia had lapses in their judgment and in their clearances, Morocco was able to stay in this game. I think it honestly could have been a much different story had things gone differently for Zambia earlier, right? Have they put away their chances and their confidence grows a little bit more, and then they can play more defensive and they don't have to get as stretched out.
I just want to change my wording here. Rigged, I just mean like highly influenced by the referee being very involved in multiple calls. So just want to make sure that that is clear. But why don't we take a look at the Rachel Kundinanji goal that gets called back. Apparently it's offsides and I don't see it. Lisa, talk me through this one.
So you can see Rachel Kundinanji, she is in the circle. It's a set piece happening to the left of this play. So Rachel Kundinanji receives the ball. She then takes, attacks the defender, cuts inside, and shoots the ball. It goes in. It's an incredible goal. They do call it off, but to me, where I see the offside is number 9 in yellow, right inside the D at the top of the 18, Mupopu. Right now, she's not offside, but after Kundinanji receives the ball, Mupopu creates this run towards the goal, and she is offside. Because she's in line with the goalkeeper, to me, it is offside.
Oof, I disagree. The ball, where she shoots the ball, I think the keeper's not going to save it. Whether or not she's in the right place or there's somebody running at her, I think it was a goal. I don't know how the referee called that back. She didn't have much to do with the beginning of the play.
But if Mupopu is just 3 feet to the left of the goalkeeper, that's a distraction for the goalkeeper, and they think, okay, I have to be aware of
that's
this
crazy.
Player.
With that logic,
but that's how offside works.
No. If she's in the viewpoint between the goalkeeper and the ball, yes,
or
but this
influential
was such a golazo, there's no way she's stopping it anyway.
She's influential
in
the play.
But you know what? There's a second leg. So we get to see what comes out. You know what? Ball does not lie. Let's move on to the other matchup between Nigeria and South Africa. This was a Nigeria 1-0 win, and Nigeria was quite dominant here, Darian.
Yeah, they were incredibly dominant. Oh my gosh, can't speak today. Dominant. But they have always struggled to finish their chances. This should have been a way higher score of a game for Nigeria. And I think this comes back to haunt them. This has been the tale of Nigeria for a really long time, missing on the last three Olympics. And it all comes down to not being able to finish their chances, waiting until the last moments of games to really put their front foot forward and try attempts on goal, put them on frame. And this is a stacked Nigerian side. You have one of the best African scorers ever, Asisa Oshoala. And there just needs to be more from Nigeria. I'm happy that they got the win, but these big moments are where they really struggle. But I hope that they're the team that advances, in my opinion. I think that they are, just especially coming off of this first leg, because they need the competition to go into the Olympics to keep improving as a federation. We saw them be stellar in the World Cup. They need to keep doing that and build from those games.
I was impressed with Nigerian goalkeeper Ndozie. I think she did a great job, but Nigeria's attack needs to create more of a cushion for her. Mm-hmm. So they're not relying on her to keep a shutout in a close 1-0 game in the second leg. And I think South Africa is going to make some adjustments in their attack to be able to hurt Nigeria's back line to get more goals, because South Africa can look really dangerous. Yeah. They have the players to do so. So I'm very intrigued by this second leg.
Okay, so we have your pick. You think that Nigeria is going to go through to the Olympics. Lisa, what are you thinking here?
I think South Africa is going to turn it around and get a couple in on Nigeria.
There we go. Oh, yeah. So we have to watch that and see who goes through there. We have underappreciated players and coaches in this national team international window for you next. So stay with us here on Attack Third.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back into Attacking Third. We are in a international window, and that means that there's some underappreciated players and coaches that we don't talk about as much as we should. So why don't we have a whole segment about them. Darian, get us started here, because you have an underappreciated coach to talk to us about.
I do. Well, I kind of have a coach and a player. One, I want to start with the player. Alexia Putellas. She is back with Spain. She was integral in their 7-0 win against Belgium in the Euros over the weekend, and it was a really fun game. It was great to see her leadership back on the Spanish side. I think that they really missed her, and Inform Putellas and Bonmetti is a scary duo to go up against.
And Salma Parihuela
and Esther. Like, we could say every single person on that roster. It's insanity. But I have a coach who I want to talk about, which is Twyla Kilgore. I think she has a very selfless job right now, being an interim head coach for the U.S. Women's National Team. She has been so integral to their success, and all of this changeup that's been happening, the new players coming in, kind of letting go of some of the other players that have been a part of this team and this roster for so long, it is difficult to get buy-in from a locker room, especially at that level. How do you build trust with players? How do you get your players to trust the process that you're going through, especially when you're playing a new formation. You have young players coming in who have never gotten caps that are getting significant minutes. You're asking to shorten the field and be really narrow. There's a lot of asks, and she's been so successful with this team. I love to see it, and knowing that she doesn't have the head coaching job. It's going to somebody else.
Yeah.
So still having that and having the respect from the team, having the respect from Emma Hayes, and really the world at this point, because I think she's done something really incredible with this team that we've been craving for a long time. I think these players have been craving for a really long time, is beautiful, and I don't think she gets the flowers that she deserves, and maybe still won't after, because Emma Hayes is going to come take this position over, but I love Twyla Kilgore. I think she's incredibly successful, and I'm excited to see what she even does beyond the U.S. Women's National Team being an assistant, because I think she has a huge career being a head coach for a federation at some point.
I love that shout for Kilgore. You're exactly right. It's a thankless job being an interim head coach, because getting the buy-in from the players and the respect from them is tough when you're trying to change all these things. And the players know that you're not even here for the long haul. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great shout for Kilgore and to give her some love.
I'm glad you gave her some love. That was my second potential option, Darian. But I will say, you know, she has to be getting some, you know, love from other federations or other teams saying, hey, we want you to come in the short span of time. Look at what you've done with the U.S. Women's National Team. I mean, mm-hmm. it's been a complete switch. So good for her. We love to give her her flowers. Let's go on to another coach, Lisa.
Yeah, I know that we both chose coaches. Kind of interesting. So my underappreciated coach during this international window is Canada's head coach, Bev Priestman. This is a coach that has been with the Federation for a long time, but during the last World Cup cycle, Bev Priestman and Canada Soccer were dealing with a lot of conflict between the players and the Federation that Priestman had to handle, and she did it with grace. She then signs a new contract, and she takes Canada all the way to the semifinal of the CONCACAF W Gold Cup with 4 shutouts, and Canada came out with a new style of play. They were able to score in a variety of ways. They were adding craisins to their oatmeal in the morning to give them that energy. And this was all without Christine Sinclair. So not only did Bev Priestman have to handle the disputes with the Federation, then a change in leadership at the top with Christine Sinclair, she also took a step forward with this group, and she put players in positions to succeed. Adriana Leon, Chloe LaClasse, bringing in young players like Olivia Smith. And now during this She Believes Cup, she is also finding success on the pitch through adversity, because Canada is without Quinn, Olivia Smith, Lucien Prou, Sydney Collins, Nichelle Prince. They're missing their heavy hitters, and Canada is still finding ways to win. It's not always the prettiest, but you got to give Bev Priestman some flowers. She gets it done.
I was going to poke some holes in that argument just because of their match against Brazil, the fact that they do win in penalties. I was like, you know, did they really change how they were playing? Because we saw that, but good, full, well-rounded analysis that I can't even poke holes in it. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Jenny.
My player, because I had a player instead of a coach here, Jennifer Falk for the Swedish national team, the goalkeeper there in the match against England. We've gotten to know her a little bit more through the Champions League. She's a goalkeeper for Haken, and we saw that she had 3 clean sheets in 8 matches in this iteration of the Champions League. But I'm saying that as a Haken side that wasn't even expected to be this far in the Champions League, right? So to say that she had 3 shutouts in that is quite amazing, and she prevented at least 3.58 goals in Champions League over her 8 games there. I think that she was so important in this match against England. I know that the stats don't show it. That's something I was trying to explain earlier. The stats say that there was like 2 or 3 shots on target that she saved, and I don't agree with that at all. She had some massive, massive big moments in this match that kind of changed the trajectory. Obviously, we talked about Stina Blackstenius' miss changes things, but if she's not in goal, England might have been running with a 5-0 win.
Yeah.
So that's a big one for me.
I like that shout. It's a good one because England did have a lot of good chances and opportunities, mm-hmm. and she was able to stay level-headed despite the chances and really the waves of pressure that England kept putting on Sweden's back line.
All right, ladies, that's our show. That is our show. And I just want to say, next time I'm going to show a shoulder so that I can match everybody.
You didn't get the memo
today. Are we not going to talk about the shoulder that we have to show? But there was so much. You know, I skipped over Belgium against Spain. So I just want to say again, give an opportunity.
7-0.
Spain, outstanding.
Holy
team.
Cow, they seem unstoppable right now at this point, and they just have a lot of depth.
They do.
Who is a team you guys think could challenge them?
Oh, I knew that was coming.
Brazil. I would like to see them match up against each other. Brazil's strongest squad rolling out against Spain. So I think that would be a fun matchup.
I have to agree, but I'm also going to say Japan.
Oh, I like that one. I like that one. All right, guys, thanks so much for joining us today on Attacking Third, brought to you by CarMax, the way car buying should be. Be sure to tune in tomorrow live on YouTube after the U.S. Women's National Team for our reactions on the match, and we'll be back in studio on Thursday.
The time has come for drag queens to save the world. Drag queens
save the world. RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars is back on Paramount Plus, and for the first time ever,
I want you to use your talent for good, for a change.
8 iconic queens are competing for the charity of their choice.
This is how you do drag.
Who will slay forward, win cash for their favorite cause, and a coveted spot in the Drag Race Hall of Fame? RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, new season now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.